Hello and welcome to the AgriInnovations.com podcast, all things related and debated in agriculture, from appropriate technology to fair trade, globalization, and organics. I'm your host, Frank Aragona. For this episode of the AgriInnovations podcast, we're with Sarah Hearn of the E.F. Schumacher Society. And Sarah, you are probably among many other things involved heavily with the Berkshares program, which is a local currency program. Now, obviously, this is going to be the focus of this episode. So let's get started by you telling us about the origins of the Berkshares program.
Sure, absolutely. The Berkshares program, as you mentioned, the local currency for the Berkshire region of Massachusetts. We're in western Massachusetts. The program began basically when a coalition of local folks, community leaders, activists, business people and also bankers got together to figure out how to implement a currency to support local businesses in this area. So with large help from the E.F. Schumacher Society, which is based in this area, we were able to get this off the ground in 2006. So the program's been running for just over 2 years.
Okay. And what were some of the first steps that were taken when the currency was actually being developed and issued?
Sure. So, of course, the creation of the bills themselves were a huge part of getting the currency off the ground. That involved a lot of detailed research and theory base on behalf of Robert Swan, for starters. He was the founder and president of the Schumacher Society, and he'd worked for a very long time with community economics. And so building on his history and theory base, the currency was established with Susan Witt as the one of the co-founders, and she is the current president of the Schumacher Society. They met with a local printing company in the area to figure out a special security paper that could be used, various anti-counterfeiting measures that could be taken in addition to having specific numbers on each bill to keep track of them. And then it was really a question of establishing the parameters of the program and the functionality of it, which involved partnering with the banks. So the bills are accessible for any community member, tourist, or passerby. They can walk into 12 branches of 5 local banks and exchange federal dollars for the currency. So that partnership with the bank was really key to the establishment of the program.
Yeah, you know, it just now occurs to me all the things that have to go into actually just designing the bills themselves. How did you decide what was going to go on the bills, besides the serial numbers and those sorts of things?
Exactly. Well, there was a lot of research that went into that as well, a lot of creative sparks, and ultimately what was decided was to have local heroes present on the bills, and I would encourage anyone to visit our website, which is www.berkshares.org, to view the bills. They really are quite beautiful. A gentleman, John Isaacs, designed them and has since won an award, actually a graphic design award, for their for the design of the Berkshires. So we have local heroes on each bill. There's a Stockbridge Indian, a Mohegan Indian from this the native people of this area, W.D. Du Bois, a civil rights activist and leader, of course, along with Herman Melville, Norman Rockwell, and also Robin Van Ann, who started the community-supported agriculture movement in this country. And she's featured on the 10 Berkshire.
Yeah, and I would remind our listeners that we actually interviewed the folks who, now it slips my mind the name of the farm, but the Robin Van Ann has since passed.
Sure, Indian Line Farm.
Yes.
Yeah, actually, so right down the road from us at the Schumacher.
Yeah, we have an interview with the woman who's in charge of Indian Line Farm down there when we did our series on CSA. So anybody who's interested in learning more about Robin Van Ann would do well to take a look at that podcast.
Sure.
So tell us how the system functions now that it's in place.
Sure. So the way the program works, there's a board of directors for Berkshires Incorporated, and they sort of conceived of the program, got it off the ground, and dealt with some of the details we've mentioned already. And as it functions day-to-day currently, any individual can walk into the banks I mentioned and exchange $9 federal for 10 Berkshires. So essentially there's a 10% discount built in at the current exchange rate for the consumer. The idea being just to provide an incentive for the consumer to use Berkshires and buy locally. A future evolution of the program may, you know, decrease that exchange rate or get rid of it entirely and eventually sort of untie from the federal dollar. So currently there are federal dollars in an account in each bank, literally backing each Berkshire out on the street. A future evolution of the program, however, would want to be tied to local commodities, so perhaps a basket of local goods in order to sort of determine the real value of exchange in this community.
Now, how much research are you doing in along those lines? I mean, you know, one of the things that one of the huge critiques of the current monetary crisis is that money gets created based on nothing, really. So it's basically that it's not tied to, you know, firm right. measures of production. So how do you tie the amount of money that's in circulation to the actual productivity of the local economy?
Right, and productivity is exactly at the heart of this issue, I think. So in this in future years, you know, as the program becomes more robust and more people are making use of the local currency and shopping locally, it'll start to sort of demonstrate where the leaks are in our community, in our economy. So where is money flowing where there is no local manufacturing or productivity to supply whatever good or service is required by the community? And obviously agriculture is very much at the heart and center of that issue. And the way we would actually handle that at that time would be that Berkshires would be issued as productive loans. So perhaps you're a farmer and you're seeking to establish a new greenhouse so that you can provide more local produce for more months of the year. So the Berkshires would actually be issued as a productive interest-free loan into existence, and then the farmer would repay the loan over time. But the idea being that issuance, that money coming into existence, is actually based on the future productivity of that individual.
Now, who is vested with the authority to, you know, create the money, basically?
So, at the as the current program stands, there is no federal or state legislation that prohibits private individuals, in this case, or nonprofit organization, Berkshires Inc. To create money. There's certainly a few restrictions. They can't in any way mimic greenbacks, federal dollars. And in our instance, we've also made them a little bit larger, and they're in no way to be confused with U.S. dollars. You can't mint coins, but any bills like Berkshires or another local currency is completely legal. And in terms of a future evolution of the program, the Berkshires Inc. board would decide, a committee would vote on how and when to issue that productive loan, whether it's to, you know, the baker for a larger oven to produce more bread, or, you know, the greenhouse example that I mentioned already.
Will there be collateral requirements?
For the individual? Well, I think, as I said, this is several years down the road, and I think there's a lot of theory and discussion about the intricacies of how that will unfold. But I think the point to sort of really emphasize is the stronger community connections that are really underway when people are coming together around this sort of economic exchange on a small scale. The sort of human scale meeting is very much at the center of the Schumacher Society's vision and mission. A previous sort of predecessor of the Berkshires program was actually a sort of micro lending program called Share, and very much worked on the grandmother principle, essentially. You know, you're young and you need a loan, and of course, you know, grandma provides those funds for you. Or perhaps she uses her savings account to collateralize a loan that you would get from the bank. And just the stories and the productivity that came out of that program in this community really sort of gets at the, I think, the heart of the issue as far as the trust that can really take place when face-to-face transactions are unfolding. That's a far cry from sort of the abstract monetary and lending system that we're so familiar with today.
Yeah, and your comment gets me to my next question. Berkshires have been described as slow money. What does exactly this concept of slow money mean, and why is it important, and how does it function?
Sure. And I think, you know, for us here in the Berkshires, we have a real main street filled with small, independently owned businesses, and I think that's sort of the laboratory, the playground for learning in terms of this project and what slow money entails. A favorite story of our executive director, Susan Witt, regarding Berkshire's as slow money regards giving, annual giving. An inquiry came into the society asking, you know, well, what if I really wanted to give a donation to my favorite nonprofit in Berkshire's? How would I actually go about that? I mean, I'm talking about making a $5,000 donation here. And of course, the answer is that individual should go to the bank, exchange their federal dollars for Berkshire's, and actually physically walk into that space, walk into their favorite nonprofit and call the staff together and really make a presentation of that offering, that gift, and express their thanks for the work that's being done there. And so I think that that real face-to-face interaction, regardless of the fact that it takes a little bit more time. To draw just from my personal life, I got my tooth fixed with Berkshire's, about 6 weeks ago. In order to do so, I got my bill, and I was late for work, but I walked down the street to the bank, and I got my Berkshire's and then brought them back and paid for my brand-new fixed cavity-free tooth. And so it is about sort of having to recreate our understanding of economics, our relationship to money, and yes, to time also, and sort of establishing a new mythology and new stories for ourselves around what a healthy relationship looks like and making that work in community.
Okay. And can you talk more about how local currencies promote relocalization in everything from, you know, banking, which you've somewhat addressed, to agriculture, manufacturing, service-based business, retail?
Sure. Absolutely. I think that on the agriculture front, the sustainable food and farming movement is really sort of, at this point, the pillar of hope and success as far as that's concerned. So in our community, we have a number of small organic independently owned farms, and their, you know, their work is very much amplified and I think assisted from Berkshire. So suddenly, restaurants and farms have this means of exchange that is emphasizing the importance of this local relationship. And as I said before, with respect to leaks in the local economy, perhaps a restaurant is sure getting their lettuce seasonally from a farm, but to try to really sort of up the ante and recognize, okay, well, they're always having to exchange the Berkshires back to federal dollars to get tomatoes. So, you know, how can we hook them up with a local farm and help Berkshires continue to circulate? So when we see where the Berkshires get sort of held up, in other words, they get congested, and that's where we need to sort of think creatively about promoting and establishing new local businesses. And as you said, I think local manufacturing would be a big part of that in the future.
Wow, now this is fascinating to think of local currencies as a tool for actually analyzing leaks in the economy, as you described it. Have you started this analysis now already? And, I mean, My automatic hunch is the economy, even though you guys have taken this great leap forward, that your economy mm-hmm. is still tremendously leaky in that regard.
Absolutely. And there's always such, I mean, there's almost very, very large and immediate ways in which with the right capital moving and right support, and hopefully through, as I said, an evolution of the Berkshires program, we can start to remedy some of those leaks. But to think that we're in the middle of a hardwood forest and there isn't all that much local furniture making going on, we have this overabundance of tomatoes, but is the pizza joint using local tomatoes for their pizza? So starting to identify some of those leaks is a science for sure, but I think is also readily apparent to the community. So it's also just raising awareness and consciousness about these issues, and through the program that I think is so exceptional. We like to say that somewhere hovering around 10% of Berkshire County are using Berkshires regularly. But I think a lot closer to 100% have had a meaningful conversation about their relationship to money, their relationship to the local economy, and improving both those ideas.
Yeah, and let's put this in perspective. I mean, this program's only 2 years old, so those kind of numbers are very encouraging indeed. But I want to go back to this concept of, analyzing leaks in the economy. Have you started to do the analysis in a formal way, or are you anticipating that the tools for the analysis will just be sort of emergent within the community, or are you going to apply like powerful database models to do this? I mean, what's the discussion around this analysis concept?
Well, yeah, I mean, to be frank, with current funding capacities and the intensity of sort of running the day-to-day administration of the program, it's not something that we're actively taking up at this time. But certainly I think with emerging interest, continual interest from the media and more interest coming from academic institutions, from students, there's certainly young people in the area, graduate students, doing their thesis on on Berkshire County and specifically, I think the food and farming community, what their needs are, and how those leaks could sort of be patched up in the future. So I think, yeah, from the academic community certainly, I think a grant to take that on at some point down the line would be great. But sort of the day-to-day administration of the program is where we're mostly focused at this time. There's strong institutions in our community. We're lucky to have that, and there's a good deal of dialogue going on around those issues. So hopefully that would take flight.
Yeah. So we'll call it a work in progress, and that's good. And it's a new concept to me. And I spend a lot of time thinking and talking about these issues, so it's definitely exciting.
Yes, I would also mention, Frank, that we did conduct just a very modest survey, last year. So certainly, as far as scientific method goes, it wasn't done at the scale to really reap, high quality benefits. But just as some sort of to gain some modicum of insight into it. Just this element of discussion that's taking place and interest and just really cultivating that, I think will hopefully spur us ahead into a future that could take on that task.
Yeah, and just the concept itself is innovative and revolutionary, and maybe other people will take that up in other communities and help develop those tools that are needed to do this kind of analysis.
Definitely. And specifically, I think the ecological impact of the program is something that's increasingly gaining visibility nationally and beyond, just emphasizing the idea of shopping less on the internet, buying things from, faraway lands when they may indeed be growing quite nearby. So I think in terms of the attention that climate change is receiving in the last decade, we certainly are often linked up with the environmental movement to that effect.
Now, let's take another step back and talk about, you talked about the legality of issuing the Berkshires. You said at the federal level, there's no restrictions. Well, there's certain limitations, but no outright restrictions on doing this sort of thing. At your state level in Massachusetts, there's no limitations on doing such things. What about other states in the union?
To my knowledge, there are no state laws prohibiting this sort of issuance. In fact, if we just look at a little bit of the history, in the early 1900s, you know, just about every region had its own currency. Just given the fact that that banks in those areas, commercial banks, were issuing their own private currencies. Of course, they had all sorts of government regulations, but they were issued by those banks. So there really is a lot of history with respect to a currency that's tied to a particular region.
Okay. Doesn't this seem to you like, I mean, the first thing that kind of occurs to me, well, wow, if this ever takes off, you know, the government's going to move to crush it right away, because it just seems like something that's so diametrically opposed to the current money and power structure as it stands.
Well, I mean, I think there's a variety of responses that are taking place in government and in communities. But I guess I would say that it's, you know, in no way is it meant to replace the federal currency. The utility of that, I think, is pretty much ensured. Only then to sort of to really look at what it means if, let's say, one particular region has a really difficult time economically, or, you know, if one bank were producing issuing too many notes in the historical examples I was mentioning. So if suddenly one of those currencies is being devalued, bringing down the currency in that area, that's not to say that it would bring down the whole. So I think that example, that illustration, sort of rings very true in our current economic situation, and that there are some advantages to these more decentralized models. And I think that also ties up with the work that you all do in terms of agriculture. Diversity on a farm, avoiding monocultures and that sort of thing, protects a system from vulnerability.
Yeah, well, a few things come to my mind. I mean, it's automatically a more democratic system in the sense that the currency issuance is immediately, you know, it's immediately addressable by the local populace. As things are now, you know, the economists come out and say one thing, and they fiddle with interest rates, and they put these complex models out there as their justification for doing so, that nobody without two PhDs can understand.
Right.
And of course, a local system is just much easier to base it on. Even though there's a tremendous amount of complexity at a local level, it's so much easier to determine what your local productivity is, you know, what your local economic indicators are, and then base your currency issuance on that, as opposed to trying to do that on something as diverse, complex, and large as, you know, the United States of America.
I think that's exactly right. And, you know, we're dealing here with a town of, in Great Barrington proper, of 7,000, you know, eventually, you know, where our program, when our program goes countywide, you know, about 135,000 people in the county, and just to think of that as the domain, there's real security there. And, you know, right now we have, let's see, 350, 360 businesses that are signed up, and that number just continues to grow. So certainly, the more robust the program can become, the more diversity, but again, maintaining this local self-reliance.
Yeah, and you know, it licks inflation in a way that that the traditional macroeconomists, you know, never even either consider or talk about. But let's change the thread here, speaking of macroeconomists, to a little bit of a different level. I want to talk about widespread adoption of local currencies. Now, is this something, is what you guys are doing just sort of an eccentric little experiment, or is this something that's going to be a model in the face of economic collapse and rebuilding a society, you know, on the ashes of that economic collapse, that it seems like every day is just becoming more and more of a reality for those of us who are, you know, thoughtful and paying attention?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely the latter. Certainly, our efforts at the Schumacher Society is to promote building of sustainable local economies by having sort of demonstrating the value of certain model programs, Berkshire's the local currency program being a good example of that, and just the media attention that we've received, especially since the beginning of the fall with the financial situation, is just pretty unprecedented. All sorts of media sources, and then also hearing from individuals around the country and also some internationally as well. Everything from the mayor's office in Newark to folks on Martha's Vineyard, a bunch of communities in California and Florida, and really everywhere in between. So just really serving as an educational tool from our end, and is a real model for the future, and hopefully something that could help ameliorate and sort of grow us out of the problems we're seeing currently.
So, but do you see this as sort of an inevitable pillar of a continuing healthy civilization? I mean, is it this kind of has to happen for us?
Well, ideologically, yeah, I think I see it that way. Uh-huh. But I guess, as I was mentioning before, with the sort of relationship to money and our economic system, and just how ingrained it is from these day-to-day, personal interactions and exchanges to sort of the widespread abstraction that you were describing, that people can't even really, myself included, totally wrap our minds around the complexity of what's unfolding. I definitely would see it as an integral part of a future in which communities are going to be sustainable and flourishing.
Okay, now let's talk a little bit about how people need to proceed. I am of the vein, and I've been talking about this in other realms as well. We are in a sort of a rigorous debate in the open source appropriate technology community right now, seeing what's going on and trying to drive our movement forward as quickly as possible, just because we see that it's so necessary. Considering what we're facing and considering that unemployment rates continue to surge, and I don't need to repeat the dire headlines that we see every day
right
here. But I'd like to kind of reframe that debate that we're having in terms of open source appropriate technology in the area of local currencies as well. I think that people need to move quickly on some of this stuff. So what are the steps that communities can take so that they can start getting their own local currency programs underway? I mean, you have this experience under your belt. You've made mistakes, obviously. You've had successes, obviously. So, shorten the path to adoption for people just by sharing some of the most important things.
Sure. On the practical level, of course, it's getting a coalition of folks that are have the right skill sets and also are representative of the community together to sort of make that call of action a reality. From our end at the Schumacher Society, we're sort of adamantly open source. So there's certainly a lot of good information on the Berkshire's website, just sort of detailing the intricacies of the program. Of like, okay, how do you publicize who's accepting your local currency and who's not? So we've been very meticulous and focused to create as many directories and other formats to get that information out there. The education campaign, I would say, was hugely sort of, I think, underestimated as far as how intensively that needs to be taken up in a community. On the one hand, you know, we're in a very progressive community, one that is sort of, I think, continually recognized for seeking out change, whether it be supporting the small sustainable farms in the area, you know, just on all fronts, really, a pretty liberal progressive town. And even with that in mind, just as the education campaign necessary to really make Berkshires a reality is intense, and it involves again a lot of these face-to-face interactions. I think a lot of marketing and publicity is also an important piece there. In terms of the details that go into creating a local currency in advance of its launch, we at the Schumacher Society on our website basically do our best to have any and all documents that might be useful to folks available free of charge. So that's everything from a directory of many different models of local currency programs, numerous articles, all the news coverage of Berkshire specifically and other local currencies that have been established, and also a good amount of material dealing with some of these legal details and issues. And we also you know, make ourselves available via phone and email. Happy to have communities reach out to us for direction or questions about how to get projects going.
So where's the best place to start? The CSAs or the bankers or the municipality, all of the above?
I guess I would emphasize this coalition element. You know, obviously, I also said, you know, skill sets are important. So having an accountant and a lawyer who are involved in the community and interested in getting an initiative like this off the ground is going to be hugely important. But I think ultimately, you know, a group of people who understand the ideas and are willing to work long hours and help bring it to fruition, I think that collaborative element is what I would emphasize. The website of the Schumacher Society, which also will just give you sort of some history of the SHARE program that I mentioned, and the history of the society, which sort of built up to the creation and implementation of the Berkshires program, is at it's small is beautiful, all spelled out as one. .org, and there's a whole local currency section there.
Yeah, and we'll link to the Berkshires website and the smallisbeautiful.org website on the page for the podcast for anyone who didn't have a pen handy or
great,
what have you. Now, just a couple more questions before we wrap up. Do you believe that local currencies can save lives in the face of economic and ecological collapse?
I think that is a harsh picture, and I would say yes, especially if we could sort of consider the breadth of possibility with respect to local currencies. A lot of what we've talked about, Frank, is a vision of a future stage of the Berkshires program, and sort of keeping that breadth of possibility in mind, and also some of these other programs. I'm not by any means fully versed in how they operate, but Ithaca Hours, for example, many sort of script models and bartering tools that I think are spreading up and have been really for decades in this country as a sort of alternative means of exchange, other mediums of exchange that build community and have a sort of stability that we're not finding in our present system.
Okay, well, Sarah Hearn of the E.F. Schumacher Society. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you for sharing this great initiative with us. And I really hope that this podcast and that the resources that you put out there, your website, all the great information that you have out there, and then just, you know, people getting in touch with you can help to move this local currency movement forward as quickly as possible.
Thanks so much, Frank.
That's just about it for today's episode of the Agro-Innovations Podcast. Thanks for joining us. As I mentioned previously, I'm trying to get these podcasts out more frequently, and I'm set up to do that now, whereas previously it was more difficult for me to do so. So you can look forward to these hopefully once a week. If I can get guests that frequently, then I'll try to get them out that frequently. I'm in the process of producing some more shows. I don't want to say too much quite yet because I don't have any guests lined up. Thanks again, Sarah Hearn from the E.F. Schumacher Society. Local currencies are a great topic. We want feedback from you out there, the audience. Let us know what you think. Give us comments, suggestions, what's good, what's bad, who else we can interview. I'm Frank Aragona. This is the AgroInnovations.com podcast. Saludos.